Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. At this time, we begin the TechNet. The technical net gathers curious radio amateurs every Sunday evening for the last 35 and a half years, going on 36 years, and they teach each other wireless technology. How does radios really work? How does propagation work? How does antennas work and transmission lines and so on? And we discuss the 26 different kinds of ham radio, and we discuss even other subjects of interest to ham radio operators like science and astronomy. So the subjects of discussion are not necessarily limited, although sometimes they are. A person signs into the technical net by giving us meaning WS2N, that's Paul, and AC2GS, that's Roy. Roy runs the science talk section. Paul runs the space report section. And I run the question and answer section. My name is Dick, and I'm K2RIW. The a person with a question or a comment, let me drop, signs in by giving us your call letters, your name. Try to remember to give us your name. And the word yes or no. The word yes, of course, which means you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in because you're listening. After 36 years, we believe somebody is listening. It doesn't have to be proven to us anymore. And don't be frustrated by the fact that you're occasionally going to hear things you don't understand. From time to time, I hear people saying, I don't know what in the world you guys are talking about. Well, that's the way brand new material is. With 26, 27, 28 different kinds of ham radio, and new ones being discovered all the time, you're occasionally going to hear things you've never heard before. And new material at first is uncomfortable. Just sit and listen. It'll eventually start making some sense. There is no such thing as a dumb question. We're not that snooty. A dumb question is the one that's most deserving of an answer because it represents the biggest difference between what the guy knows and what he would like to know. So don't be afraid about asking a dumb question. Can we drop? Try to remember to give a space in between, otherwise listen to the four beeps before you start transmitting. At the end of one conversation and the beginning of the next. Otherwise, you start timing out the machine. It's got four beeps because it needs extra time for resetting of all the things that are connected to it. IRLP, EchoLink, chat room, who knows what all is connected to this machine. Okay, we're going to take check-ins right now. Give me your call letters and name after the four beeps. K2RIW listening. Rich recognized. Anyone else? Okay. I heard somebody sign in but didn't say anything to us. So please give us your call letters and name if you've got a question or a comment. K2LIW listening.
Okay.
Looks like we're going to have a pretty light night tonight. Maybe everyone's out, didn't return from the beach yet because it was so hot today. Give me a call letter's name if you want to check into the TechNet. K2RIW listening.
I have a question for Dr. Roy's section.
Okay, a person said, I have a question for Dr. Roy's section. And that section, you better do something to increase your signal strength. You were 80% noise, 20% audio, because I'm wearing earphones. I was able to pull you out of noise and hear what you were saying. Once again, somebody give me your call letters and name if you've got a question or a comment for the net. And do so right now.
WHYYY, show, yes.
Great to hear from you, Joe. We need people tonight. So, if we run very light, I may go into a discussion of small antennas. From time to time, I hear people talk about low performance of small antennas, compact antennas. And do antennas really have a lower performance than a full-size antenna? Believe it or not, there are two answers to that question. Both yes and no. And the details of that are kind of interesting from my point of view. One last call. Anyone with questions or comment for the net, please give me your call letters and your name right now.
No comments at this time, but you talk about have one for the evening.
WB2GX, I would love to hear about the small antennas.
I'd love to tell you about them, Rich, and I think I will. Okay, so we're going to pick up Rich first. N2EO, go right ahead with your question or comment. Start Rich, K2RIW, and the tech pad.
Okay, again, N2EO, have a good comment to the net. Over the last few years, I've had this put-together furniture for the ham station. It's an L-shaped network, an L-shaped table, one side the computer, the other side the ham equipment. I was thinking about something the other night. Not two of these. They don't hold up because they aren't wood. They're made out of some kind of press board. And they all fall apart. I remember I saw something in the ARRL handbook many years ago. I don't know if it's still there. The suggestion was to get solid doors, not the hollow doors. The solid ones cost more. And what I'm going to do is put two of them together, making an L-shaped desk. And I'll have the rear side of each one secured to the wall and have legs. You could buy these legs standard in the hardware, in the Home Depot. Standard length, standard height for a table is 30 inches. And they sell the legs just to do that. So I just want to make a suggestion. Because when I move upstate, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Back to Ned.
Sounds like a good idea, Rich. Do you remember approximately what year and what month in QST where you read about the details of this suggestion? Do you happen to remember how far back in QST was that? Or is there any other search words you could give us so that when we go to the QST archives, we'll be able to find that issue? Back to you, Rich.
I don't. Probably was in the late 60s or early 70s. That's the best thing I can say. And you finish off those wood doors, first coat, polyurethane, it's a sealer. It seals into the wood. Then you put the second coat on. A day later, that has to be sanded. And then the third coat, a day later, then. And you do the finishing coat, gets a light sanding, they look great.
The L-shaped tables that you bought in the past that fell apart, that were made out of press board, flake board, or whatever. What was the method of failure, Rich? Did the legs disconnect from the board, or did the board itself start caving in the center? What was the method of failure? And I wonder if there's a way that a person could put one extra sheet of wood on those to correct that failure. That's another possibility. Over to you, Rich.
Oh, no, the screws they give you in the assembly don't hold because the press board, eventually they loosen up and fall out. The second desk I've had since I've been here, I'm not buying a third one upstate. This is better. The only thing you don't get is drawers, store stuff. But that could be done with either shelves or other drawers that you buy standalone. And that's fine.
Okay, Rich, from what you just described, the screws pull out of the press board. And I can sort of see how that happens. If a person was crafty enough to replace these screws, these blind screws, with machine bolts where you drill all the way through the press board. And so you take a flathead screw, which has got a bevel on the sides, and you properly drill a hole through the press board and use the right kind of a countersink so that that flathead screw is now flush with the upper surface. The screw goes all the way through the board and picks up the legs. I think that would have much less failure if a person was willing to make that modification. What do you think, Rich? N2EO, K2LIW.
Suppose that's Dick. I just don't want to do it. I think it's too much work. And it's penny wise and pound foolish.
But what I'm describing is an hour's worth of work, whereas to take the doors that you're describing and properly finish them and put legs and drawers and everything else into them, that's possibly more expensive and certainly a significant number of hours. Now, on a slightly different subject, Rich, a week or so ago, you were having a discussion with a guy named George, I can't think of his call letters right now, about compact antennas. And you were telling him that the infinitesimal dipole has very little loss. And what was that? What was George's call letters? I'm having trouble remembering him. Over to you, Rich, KQLIW.
George's call letters are KD2FIU.
Yeah, I should remember him very well. He signs in quite often. So if George is around tonight, we'll pick up that discussion with him on compact antennas that the other Rich, WP2GXM, wants to hear about. Okay, anything further you want to discuss with reference to ham radio plus computer tables, Rich? N2EO, K2LIW.
Oh, not really, Dick. I was thinking of this because my first choice to move is Binghamton, New York, because it gives a very nice house, believe it or not, not a dump, for $60,000. That's what I want to do. I want to get a house sort of in the woods, out of town. I want to be, see the wildlife. I would never want to shoot them. That's me. But I do want to buy a camera and take photographs.
That sounds like a fun combination. And good luck with that one. Joe's the next person on our list. WA2RYY. Go right ahead, Joe. K2RIW.
Okay, I have a main question and a sub question actually for your broadcast engineer. But if you know the broadcast engineer question is too many type of thing, you can just listen to it. But anyway, main question is: I put up my 6-meter antenna, that folded monopole. Performance-wise, I have no way to really test this thing because I haven't been able to hear anybody on 6 meters. I keep the radio on frequently. Don't hear anybody on in frequency. I've called a few times and don't get an answer with anybody. In this mounting place up on the roof, instead of being tested on the behole of the backyard, on center frequency 52.56, got a return loss about -22, which looks like that's pretty good. And if I go out as far as 51.1, the return loss goes to like -10. I go up the other way, like 54. I think it's like 5430, 5432, or something like that. It goes up again to -10, so it's a little unsymmetrical as far as the curve going each way. But the best performance, I intend to cut it 52525, so 5256 is not very far off what I'm looking for. So it seems like performance-wise, with return loss, it looks like it's okay. Is there anybody out there that has 6-meter equipment that I could run a test with sometime that has communication through this repeater. I'd like to know if I could run a test with somebody sometime, just to be able to compare this to my discount antenna and find out if it's really working okay or not.
I would also look at the repeater directory, the ARRL repeater directory. Guarantee there are some 6-meter repeaters, probably with strange PL requirements on Long Island. If you knew of one of those and you put in the right PL, you'd be able to bring up the repeater with your folded monopole. Also, even though the standing wave ratio may get kind of high, down at 50.15, the calling frequency for single sideband people, I would do some listening down there. So, let's see if we have anyone on frequency who knows of a repeater on the south shore of Long Island, center of Long Island, south shore, that's where Joe is. Do you know of 50 megacycle repeaters that Joe should be looking for, or other 50 megacycle activity he should be looking for? Please give us your call letters right now. K2IW on the TechNet.
Two, Jack. I have a repeater program on my radio for, like, Huntington, so I'm according to the guy's repeater. That doesn't do me any good. I want to measure the performance compared to another antenna. I'd rather do something point-to-point with somebody if they have 6 meters available, not work to a repeater that's up about 330 feet.
Okay. Let's see what Eric's got to say. Go right ahead, Eric.
Now, WB2ZIC has a 6-meter repeater. I can't remember the frequency right offhand. I mean, I can go look in the car. I have it there. Howie, WB2HWW, has a 6-meter input and output of his repeater, too. And that's according to it, which had a pretty whopping signal. So, they're both there and they both work. So, you know, you can use that as a point of reference. If you want to go direct, we can give that a shot at some point. Just have to arrange it. HYW, K2ZN.
Sounds like you're equipped on 6 meters, Eric, and can give him a direct signal. Rich, if you do bring up the WB2HWW or the GXE repeater, and if you're able to hear the signal through your folded monopole, then compare it to any other antenna you've got on the property, that would be one way of doing the comparison, just listening to the downlink. There's probably a way you can do it with solar noise, but let's not get into that one. It's a little bit elaborate. So, do you have another 6-meter antenna on the property that you could use as a reference? And by the way, in the case of the monopole, let me backtrack. If the antenna itself has a physical length of a half wavelength and less, then you know the antenna pattern. Whether you've got small ground plane radials, big ground plane radials, those are minor details. It just affects whether or not you get a significant or not significant amount of common mode current flowing down the outside of the coax. So what I'm getting at is that if the physical antenna is a half wavelength or less in physical length, the antenna pattern is ordained. There's no way it can suddenly have a pancake pattern with 10 dB of gain on the horizon. It's going to have a 2.1 dB of gain over isotropic on the horizon. If that's combined with a low standing wave ratio, which means all the power you're putting into it is being radiated, you put the two together. By the laws of conservation of energy and reciprocity, you have a guaranteed performance. So low visual, low common mode current, less than a half wavelength. Now, if it happens to be a collinear with a whole lot of individual elements to it, yes, there are methods by which the pattern could be above or below the horizon, and that's something else you'd have to investigate. So what I'm getting at is I think you've got an antenna which has to have the performance you're looking for, and unless you've made it out of lossy materials. And if you did make it out of lossy materials, put 30 watts into it for 10 minutes, turn it off and touch it, and if anything gets hot, you know where the loss is. So those are some of my comments, Rich. W2RYY, K2RY. K2RYW in the TechNet.
Fix your radio. Comment?
All right, I heard Eric and someone else who said comment. Eric first, and then the other person in that order. Eric, go ahead.
Your radio is crackling. Bang it.
Okay. I heard those crackles.
Repeater, time out.
I heard those crackles, and I thought that was on the repeater, but maybe it is me. Who's the other person who wants to make a comment? Who is that?
Heard it direct.
Good news. Who's the other person who wants to make a comment?
Who's Richie? N2EO.
N2EO, go ahead.
Okay, Dick. I believe Steve. WB2ZSE has a 6-meter repeater. I heard him talking about it. I think he put it up recently. I don't know where it is, but I don't know the frequency. But Joe might contact Steve and ask him.
I already have that program into my radio. Technically, what I'm using is a converted commercial radio. My Kenwood Cantu PL, so I can't use that talking on repeaters. And by the way, Dick, the return loss was at 51.1 minus 10. At 50.1, it's too high for me to use it on my Kenwood. The Kenwood actually folds back noticeably. 50 watts now goes down about 25 watts or less, maybe about 10 to 25 watts. So I can't use it on the SSB portion of the band, unfortunately.
It does sound like you've designed it for the FM portion of the band. Is the antenna physically a half wavelength or less tip to ground, Eric? I mean, Joe? Here we go. Yep, Joe. And even a 10 dB reflection coefficient, that's a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, only half a dB of loss if your transmitter will tolerate it. And there's various ways you could put stubs in there to make your transmitter tolerate it. You could put the right kind of a correction stub, you know, with an SO239 T connector and a piece of coax cable at the right length on the third leg. You could correct the VISWR. Do an extremely good job of correcting the VISWR. I didn't say that's easy. I'm going to hit my machine again, stand by. See if that crackle will go away, assuming that I'm causing it. I'm still hearing a little bit of crackle. So when it comes to the efficiency of the antenna and the gain that you're worried about, I think you might be worrying unnecessarily. You're worrying that it might have low gain because you're unable to get a response from anybody. It looks like a QSO with Eric is a good way to go. W2RYY, T2RYW, go ahead, Joe.
Let's see if my radio has cracklies on it. A little bit. Duplex. It's a folded monopole. That's the name of what they call the antenna. It's a commercial antenna. It's been made for probably 50 or 60 years. It's a Phelps Dodge antenna, and it's called a folded monopole. That's the name of it. The top element is less than a quarter wavelength in length. I think I brought this up in the past as a discussion item. The radials are longer than a quarter, about maybe a quarter wave, maybe a little longer than a quarter wave, but the top element definitely tunes correctly with it being much less than a quarter wave because the top element comes up and goes around. And that cracking is my transmitter, so you got something on the main receiver, or whatever receiver I'm hitting right now. Can't blame Dick's radio. See? It's doing it on me, too. So that's the type of antenna I'm dealing with. I realize that the antenna has a little bit on the narrower side as far as bandwidth. I didn't expect the antenna to have wide enough performance to be able to give me 50 megahertz to 54 megahertz. I realized that would be a possibility because of the Q of the antenna down there. So I would just like to try it with my other antenna. My Discone antenna is actually resonates fairly well at 50.200. So I can use that for SSB work. It's a little worse, the wider banded antenna, but it's a little worse at 52.525. But I like to be able to just try like an A-B test with somebody at a distance, like 25, 35 miles away from me, point to point. Talking through a repeater really doesn't sort of answer my question. You know, full quieting is full quieting.
I think you're telling me you have no signals transmitter on the equipment that you've got that can listen on 52 megacycles. If you had a signal strength meter, then comparing the two antennas would be pretty easy. Another approach is if you had a step attenuator, and using the exact same radio with antenna A, how many dB of attenuation can you plug in before you hit threshold? And with antenna B, how many dB of attenuation can you plug in? So by way of a step attenuator or a signal strength meter, you should be able to compare those antennas when listening to the downlink of a repeater. On top of that, the fact that the antenna is a folded monopole, that's just the impedance network, Rich. The fact that it's a folded monopole does not change the antenna pattern. That's just an impedance matching network. It's still a quarter wavelength long antenna with a very predictable antenna pattern. It has no choice. If you wanted to steer that antenna pattern, tilt it up at 30 degrees, and it's only a quarter wavelength long, you cannot do that. The laws of physics won't let you do that. So you know what the pattern is ahead of time. So is there a way you can put in a field strength meter or a step attenuator that allow you to do the comparison on a downlink? W2LYY, K2RIW, go ahead, Joe.
Sure, I can switch radios. I can take the radio that I'm using, which is a Motorola Maxtrack, and switch it to my Kenwood TS690. I can operate 6 meters on that. But as I said, I can't run SSB or even FM below like 50 and a half megahertz. It folds back the power. So I'd have to pick some frequency above 51, between 51 and 52 to get, you know, for doing it, or 52.525, and switch to antenna A and go to, from A to B. The problem with measuring signal strength is the S meter and the thing in FM mode is pretty loose. A low-level signal will pretty much almost pin the meter and drive to like 60 over. So, and there's no way to recalibrate it or make the calibration correct. It's always been like that. I tried working with a signal generator to recalibrate it. It can't be calibrated, just the way the radio works. There's nothing I can really do about that. If I really want to measure signal strength, I would use a spectrum analyzer. Having somebody transmit from a distance, I could look at one antenna and look at another antenna. So this is what I'm sort of dealing with. I just want to find out the antenna's basically working okay. Back to you.
Yeah, because most FM receivers have a limiter and discriminator. Because of the limiter function, the S meter connected after that limiter is pretty spooky in the way it works. And it's got a very strong nonlinearity. You're absolutely right. Do you own a step attenuator, Rich? Joe, do you own a step attenuator? Go ahead.
Yes, I do. I have a K attenuator. I have to actually go in the house up and downstairs and find out what I did. I've had one from probably 25 years ago, picking up at a flea market. I believe it works. I believe there's 50 ohm impedance on it also. So yes, I do have one of those.
So if you can get any kind of a signal into your antenna, into a receiver, and the step attenuator is between the receiver and the antenna, and you plug in the step attenuator until you bring it down the threshold on that receiver, then go over to the other antenna, like your disc cone, and do the process again. That, believe it or not, is a very exact test. And even if your step attenuator only moves in 10 dB steps, there's ways that you can create a variable attenuator for the 1 dB steps, or a continuously variable attenuator. You might own one of these directional coupler-like things where you can twist the knob and it changes the coupling coefficient and changes how much signal comes out of the coupled port. And to twist that knob until you get the equal performance out of the two antennas. And then when your signal generator, finding out what those two knob settings are in real attenuation in dB. So I'm pretty sure you've got enough equipment, if properly applied, that you can do it with what you already own, Joe. W2RYY, K2RIW in the tech net.
Oh, yes, collectively I probably do have what I need. I want to remember the K attenuator is about maybe 10 inches long or so, has a bunch of, bat handle toggle switches on it, and it has two BNC connectors on the thing, on each end. It's 50 ohm impedance. I think it's got either two or possibly three 20 dB switches, and the rest are like a combination of either like 10, 6, 3s, and 1s. Maybe two and one. I mean, you can put all sorts of various combinations in, but it's I think end-to-end is probably has about 80 dB attenuation. I remember looking at all the switch settings, which is, you know, pretty decent. So I just have to find somebody who's got some time on, like, a weekend evening type of thing. Can't do it during weekdays. It just doesn't work for me. But, like, on a weekend evening, and somewhere where I can use this repeater as an alternate way of communicating, and then do some tests in 6 meters. Now, they will tell me right away the antenna is working as good, better, or worse than my disc cone, which is what I'm transmitting to you right off right now on 2 meters. So it's a wideband antenna. It's sort of, you know, sort of flexible.
That K attenuator sounds ideal, and I've done that exact test, but be careful. Oh boy, you got to be careful. I put in a step attenuator between the piece of equipment and the antenna and tried various receiving combinations. Then I made the mistake of transmitting. That K attenuator probably can't tolerate more than a watt, and maybe not even a watt, maybe only half a watt. You transmit 30 watts to that K attenuator, and you're going to burn up some number of those attenuations. Been there, done that. So you got to be super careful about making sure you somehow lock down the push-to-talk switch to make sure you can't possibly transmit when the attenuator is in the line. Back to you on that one, Joe. WHRYY-K2RIW.
Yeah, okay. Well, I wasn't born last night. I would remove the microphone so the radio cannot possibly transmit, because I have had that thought in the back of my head. All it takes is one quarter second burst of energy, and you just wreck the thing. I'm very, very aware of that type of thing. I think the thing probably, I think it tells you it's good for like a quarter watt or something like that of a power dissipation, so I wouldn't even try to do that. Well, the Kenwood puts out 50 watts of radio. I'm talking on, I usually use on FM, is good for at least 60 watts. So, but just, you know, one of those type of things. Doesn't have to be this week. It could be some other time. Eric, if he's got some time or you got 6 meters of equipment available, it's easy to, you know, when I can work somebody on high band and low band at the same time. And Eric, since you're listening here, my question for you is, and it's a pretty simple one, occasionally I watch programming on 5-4, and sometimes the picture, the background, if the background's still, it looks okay, but, like, movement looks like it's either jittery or, you know, like it's like it takes like a very short amount of time to fill in the movement. No other channels do that have multiple channels coming off one RF carrier. No other DTV transmissions do this. I've only noticed on 5-4. When you get a chance, look at it yourself between today and next week. You'll see what I'm talking about, and you can say, oh, yeah, I've seen that before.
I'll look now.
Eric, is 5-2 and 5-4 coming from the exact same location? Over you, Eric.
No. 5-2 is actually on channel 9, and 5-4 is on channel 5. But give me a second, I'll confirm that.
Okay. So that's another possible explanation, Joe. When the signal is near threshold, it'll move and jump like that. The fact that those two different dash numbers are really coming from two different locations means you're getting two different signal strengths, and one of them may be near threshold and or getting co-channel interference. Over to you, Joe, for any comment on that, K2RIW.
No. I know better than to ask a question like that without knowing part of the answer. 5-4 and 5-1 are off the same carrier, off the same transmitter location. 5-2 is off of someplace else. I think the channel WWOR's site. But 5-1 and 5-4 are coming on. They're both on RF-44.
I think Eric is off doing some checking right now. Okay, so 5-1 and 4 you think are the same. 5-2 is the oddball. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
It's not that it's an oddball. They play swapsies. You know, they used to have 5-2 is being broadcast by WWOR on RF channel 25, and for a while they had either 9-2 or 9-3 was being broadcast on one of the slots on RF-44. They just play swapsies. So I guess if one station went off the air completely, you still have some sort of coverage of those other channels by sharing. They stopped doing that because there is no more 5-3. So I think 5-1, 2, and 4 are actually on RF-44. There was a 5-day streak broadcast by Channel 9, no longer being broadcast anymore. So all the carriers, all the DTV channels they see, the sub channels, are all on RF-44. But this is a very strange effect. It looks like, you know, it's kind of odd. It's almost looking like if you're looking at a computer movie on a computer, and you didn't have enough bandwidth, and like the thing will freeze and then move and then freeze, and parts of the picture don't require refreshing, you don't see that effect happening too.
You're probably not near your television set at this time. Is that correct, Joseph? In other words, if it was doing it right now or not doing it. If it was or was not doing it right now, you might not know that, Joe. Is that true?
Hey, we're absolutely right next to my television set. I just got to reach the remote and turn the TV on. It does it all the time. It's not a intermittent type of thing. It does it all the time with the programming. You watch the programming, and if there's movement in the back of the programming, like people moving or the background, the camera panning, looking at people as they're moving, you look at the background behind them, like grass or fences or whatever, and you see it takes a little bit to fill it in sometimes, but portions of the picture that are not moving, it doesn't require refreshing, you don't see this effect happening to. Eric will tell you, since he goes back on the radio.
WB2HWW with a comment.
You got it, Howie. Wait for the beeps.
Hello, Dick. Hello, Joe. I was listening to it. By the way, my 6-meter repeater's off the air, so it's just been off the air for a while. But Dick, the antenna he has, it's a folded monopole. That thing, when you go out of resonance, that's a stub. One end of it is grounded. It's a quarter wave. And as you go out of resonance, that thing is going to start to shunt your RF. So if you have any kind of return loss, that thing ain't going to work that well. It's almost like having a shorted stub, and as you go out of resonance. So those antennas are very sharp. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, my very last words to you, Howie, is wait for the beep. And you didn't. You transmitted immediately. The fact that the antenna is a folded monopole, as opposed to a quarter-wave ground plane set at the bottom, doesn't matter. That may make a difference in the bandwidth. However, if you're measuring its standing wave ratio or measuring its reflection coefficient, you know, 100 watts forward, 20 watts back type stuff, then you know exactly what the efficiency, well, you know exactly how much power is being accepted and how much power is being reflected. So there is no magic, because it is a folded monopole, it has no magic way of throwing away energy and transmitting it in some other direction when you go off frequency where it's tuned. The pattern you get when you're off frequency on that antenna versus a non-folded monopole, quarter wavelength long, off resonance, you'll get the exact same pattern in all cases. And until you go to twice the frequency, you ain't going to see any change in the pattern. All the way down to 0 megahertz, that thing will have the exact same antenna pattern. So he can measure his efficiency by whether or not it gets hot. And if it stays cold, it's not turning any of the RF energy into heat. He doesn't have to measure the pattern. The pattern is preordained because of its physical length. I mean, every antenna that has any pattern has to have some physical length or extra parasitic elements to generate that pattern. There's no other way you can do it. So the pattern is ordained. The insertion loss of heating is preordained. The only thing left is the standing wave ratio, which he can measure. Do you see what I'm saying on that, Howie? Please wait for the beeps. WB2HWW, K2RIW.
I agree with you. It's correct. The pattern will not change, but those antennas seem to get very inefficient as you go too far off either side. You know, they're basically designed to be put at a tower and not get interference from nearby transmitters. They're very tight, too. Okay. Just wanted to just let you guys know that my 6-meter station is not on the air right now. Probably be back on in a month or two, probably after the season. All right, I'm going to stand by. I just wanted to make that comment. But those monopoles, you know, they're good antennas, but they don't have a lot of bandwidth, Dick.
You being a 6-meter man from way back, Howie, are there other 6-meter repeaters that Joe could easily get to from his South Shore, center of Long Island location. Back to you, Howie. Wait for the beeps. I didn't.
I think Joe knows a couple of others. He got ZSE. There's not that many. A lot of them are off the air. This is not that popular, but if you go to 52525, you can listen around. You may hear one or two guys locally, but very little activity on 6. The only one I know is ZSE, Steve. Steve and WAK. Those two guys are partners in that machine, so... CSE, and that's about it. I know there may be one or two up in Connecticut, but that's about it. I haven't been on 6 in a great while. K2RIW, WD2HWW. And I guess you can hear me on the input. I'm on my remote base tonight.
I'm hearing you beautiful on the input. Let me drop this. What is the frequency and PL for ZSE? Howie, go ahead.
Like a 136.5, if I remember right, and I don't remember. It's an odd split. It's down below the. It's down below what do you call 52, and it's a 600 kc split. It's a 500 kc split. It's not a standard 1 meg split. It's a 500, and I'm not at liberty to say it. It's up to Steve if he wants to give it out. It may be in a repeater directory.
Dick, I have his frequency in my repeater ready. I told you that about 20 minutes ago.
With the 0.5 meg split, Joe, go ahead.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's like of a 500 or 600 kilohertz between input to output. I think it's 500 kilohertz. I've had his frequency for a long time. I keep up. There's nobody answers you over there. I'd really rather not use a repeater because it totally defeats the purpose of what I'm trying to do things. And I can't use an attenuator. And see what's...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Don't worry, I heard you beautifully on the input. You could transmit to the repeater on the disc cone and listen on the folded monopole with the attenuator in line. And that way you could key up the repeater and use your two antennas. Then flip the two antennas and repeat the process. So as long as you've got a second rig... If you've got a second 6-meter rig that can bring up ZSE on the second antenna, is that a possibility, Joe? Go ahead.
Better idea than that, Dick.
No, that's not a possibility. I have one radio program that will do PL tones on 6 meters. That's the Motorola I'm using right now. It's a Maxtrack. The TS690 cannot do PL, don't have the PL deck inside the radio, so that's... out the window. Can't use that for anything except listening only.
HWW with a solution.
I'll get you in a minute, Howie. All right, take the radio that's got the PL, put it into the disc cone, bring up the repeater. The other radio that doesn't have FM transmit PL capability, it's used in the receiver mode with the step attenuator. And you measure how many steps are required to bring it down the threshold. Then reverse the two antennas. So if one receiver that can't transmit on 6 meters can receive, and it's got the step attenuator, and the other one's got the PL into the disc cone, I think you could make it work that way. Over to you first, Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah, I could try that, but I can hook both into a coax switch, easily to be able to go to A to B and, like, have an instantaneous comparison, Like I said, if I could transmit on, we'll talk to somebody on high band, either on direct or through a repeater, and not only worry about transmitting on the low band so I don't burn out the attenuator, that'd be better for me. So it just depends on who's got the availability. If Eric has it, that's fine. Eric, did you did you have a chance to turn your TV on and look at 5-4?
Eric may not have come back yet from the television measurement. WB2HWW, go ahead, Howie. Please wait for the beeps.
Wait for the beeps. By the way, I'm hearing when the repeater timed out before, I heard a guy up in, I heard a Rhode Island repeater. I heard a W1 repeater on a 141. Okay, the comment is this. You get somebody, you take your service monitor, Joe, you put a quarter wave whip on the back of your car, take the service monitor, drive a half mile away from the house, set the service monitor up for 0 dBm, you know, whatever, 1 or 2 milliwatts. Have somebody sit there so it doesn't walk on you, and put a constant carrier on 52525 or somewhere. Come back to the house and do the A-B test. Just drive the car a mile or two away. 1 dB, you know, you can use the service monitor as a generator. That would be a way to do it. You set up a test range. What do you say to that, Dick?
I understand what you're saying, but that's not going to work at the present time. I'll have to do it with somebody on the ground with a ground station.
Well, just an idea. Just an idea. But those monopoles, I would say this much. If the traffic does give you a good return loss, I wouldn't use the antenna. It's just my opinion. I know what Dick is saying is theoretically correct, but I've noticed over the years that if you take a trombone or any of those antennas and you're not within a couple hundred kcs, they start to give you grief. K2RIW, WB2HWW. Hope you're doing okay. Haven't been on the radio in a long time.
Eric recognized. Yeah, part of the, as you start tuning away from the resonant frequency, you're getting a significant amount of reflected power.
Repeater, timeout.
That significant amount of reflected power drastically starts eating into the isolation of your duplexing filter. Therefore, your receiver becomes desensitized because of the bizarre of your own antenna. So that's one of the explanations for why you've seen any of these antennas on repeater service off resonance giving you a lot of grief. So what did you see, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
All right, Joe, I'm assuming you're talking about light TV, okay, and then I'm 44, but 5.3 is on 25, which is channel 9. Now, at my receiver location, the SNR I'm getting off of 25 is around 33, 34 dB, which is really good. It has nothing to do with signal strength. And on 44, down around 23, it's like barely receivable for a lot of receivers. That's one issue. And the reason for that probably is not necessarily the transmitter. The channel 9 is on one antenna on Empire, and channel 5 is on a different antenna on Empire, which has a different set of patterns. But the actual stream rate of light TV, that's the word I was looking for, is very slow. It's only about 1.5 megabits per second. And with the SNR being so low, you're going to see a lot of stuff in the picture. I get a solid picture out of it because I've got some pretty good receiving stuff. So anyway, that's what I found. K2RIW, K2JX.
Because those in signals on channel 5, light TV, among others, are coming from different antennas with different patterns, that suggests you could be getting different kinds of multipath into your particular receiver on the South Shore. And multipath will sometimes create some grief on the demodulating receiver. Is that another factor, Eric? Go ahead.
Fact that he's talking about 5.4, it means that, you know, that's coming off a particular antenna. 5.1 and 5.2 and 5.4 are all coming from one antenna. And 5.3 is actually from a different antenna. So it's not the antenna issue. Either there's something going on with their particular transmitter that the SNR is so low, or actually the EVM is about 3%, which is pretty awful. If I could move my antenna, I probably would get a little better result, but judging from what I know in the past, they're not doing anywhere near as well as they used to.
If I understand you correctly, 5.3 is coming from a different antenna or a different location. That may explain why quite often I do not get 5.3 at all. Eric, go ahead.
25 and 44 coming from the same location. It's just that one antenna is just above the mooring mast, the other antenna is further up, and I think
second tape is more the east.
And now these coming from World Trade or Times Square?
These guys, the Fox stuff is coming from Empire.
Okay, all of it's coming from Empire, but different antennas at Empire is what you're describing. And for all we know, they have different umbrella patterns, so to speak. Is that true?
That's why in the beginning, when before everybody maximized, you could move your antenna slightly to the right and get 5, and then move slightly to the left and get 9.
And part of what's going on in that case is that every antenna, television aerial, has got all kinds of fingers in space with nulls in between. So as you move the antenna a few degrees, you steer some of those nulls in the direction where you might be getting a multipath that would give your, and the multipath is giving you a time delay that gives the demodulator some grief. So on a couple of occasions, Eric, I've recommended that anybody who wants to do over-the-air digital television reception, if he has the resources, he's way ahead of the game to put a rotator on his television receiving antenna. Not because he's having trouble finding Empire State Building, because the vulnerability of the multipath bouncing off a water tower in his neighborhood by being able to steer the antenna to get the null toward the water tower will give you reception where you wouldn't ordinarily get reception. So my recommendation has been for people who are serious to put a rotator on the antenna. Sometimes you disagree with me, sometimes you agree with me on the rotator. Today it sounds like you agree with the rotator. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
No. Yeah, it was all with personal opinions. K2IW, K2J. As far as I'm concerned, Fox can go off the air and I'll be very happy. But the reality is that you don't need a rotator for stuff coming off of World Trade at night. Everywhere we've been, we're getting pretty good results. The fact that the SNR fellow says that somebody's really not watching their transmitter. Oh, and the point of it, light TV, whereas you get the other one probably just fine. It's because of the slow bit rate. There's not that much FEC buried in it.
I understand. So it doesn't have as much forward error correction. Now, you're getting how many dB suppression telling you that somebody's not watching the transmitter? From your point of view, is the transmitter 10 dB down, Eric? Go ahead.
RF-wise, probably not. Looks like the RF levels are about the same as it always is. That's why I made that statement. What you've got to do with your exciter is your exciter has to compensate for the group delay and differential phase that the amplifier has across the band. And generally, we're not talking about an amplifier. We may be talking about 10 boards or 15 boards or 20 boards of amplifier, depending upon the power output. And it being UHF, it's going to be in the tens of kilowatts, if not more. So there are different kinds of exciters, some that monitor themselves and run continuously. There are other types that you take a sample and say, okay, I've got my linear corrections and my nonlinear corrections, and they're two separate things. And they hold the setting. Sometimes you get a power bump or something like that. It resets itself and goes back to whatever the default tables are, which usually looks pretty lousy. So it could be something of that nature. I mean, I had a problem one day was I put a Harris exciter in line for a smaller transmitter, and it was producing great signals and making 35, 36 dB of SNR right at the transmitter. And we had a power hit, and I forgot to leave it out of a hold, as it is, and I started making 17 dB of output, which is hard for any TV receiver to pick up. So it's something that can happen to anybody. There's other types that continuously monitor the output and continuously make corrections, and sometimes they actually make the shoulders too steep or too wide. Generally, most folks don't run continuous correction because of a number of reasons like that. But the newer one now, which...
Repeater, timeout. Peter, timeout. Cancel.
Eric, when the signal to noise ratio degrades right at the transmitter. I presume that's because of phase errors, group delay distortion, and things like that. When somebody like Joe uses his vector network analyzer, his service monitor, and he's looking at the spectrum across the bandwidth of the 6 megs of the channel itself, assuming his antenna is flat and he's not getting selective fade in the path between him and Empire, once there is a signal-to-noise ratio degradation, does it usually show up as something funny about the spectrum? The spectrum, the Bart's haircut is not flat and the edges don't look right. Is there a way that you could be getting degraded signal-to-noise ratio and still have a perfect-looking spectrum on a spectrum analyzer? Over to you, Eric, K2RIW.
RIWK2J. Yeah, we have a problem with language. Okay, actually the real measuring number that we should be working with is called EVM, or error vector modulation. Okay, so when we talk about signal noise, I've always used that magic number of 27 dB, we're talking about the data itself, okay, the data versus the clock that's being sent out. So it's not signal noise in the traditional sense that you think of it in terms of RF. Okay, here we're in the digital world, so I'll use EVM as a better number so it's not confusing. Good EVM numbers like 0.5, 0.7%. Once you start getting over 1%, it gets worse. The higher that number is, the harder the receiver's decoder has to work. Let me let it drop.
I'm going to guess 0.5% is something like 36 dB.
The 0.5 is really a super whoopee-doo number. It's a little over 40, actually. Typically, everybody runs like 0.9, 1, 1.2 in that neighborhood. I'm seeing over 3 on Fox, which says to me that somebody's asleep at the switch, or if conditions in the antenna change, or you know, something of that nature, something a little bit different. So you start to see a little more blocking, a little breakup. Sometimes you'll see the background of the picture stall, and the people are still moving in front of it and leaving little trails, things like that.
With that EVM being as high as 3%, I am guessing periodically your demodulator will hiccup and give you a ratcheting of the picture. Is that a possibility, Eric? Go ahead.
Comment, Eric?
That's a dig first. What you see is, you got to remember that you're making a picture out of coefficients that you've created. You're transmitting a series of coefficient numbers, and each one of those coefficient numbers is really a 16 by 16 or an 8 by 8 square of pixels. So the effect that it can have as the things start to drop out and the error correction can't keep up with it, it actually skips, and whatever the last frame had there gets stuck there and it doesn't get updated. So go ahead, Jeff.
I think 5-4 has been on the air for a couple of years now. I don't remember the exact. They come out of October 2016 or someone like that. But I've noticed this effect on 5-4 pretty much the first time they come on the air till present. Nothing's changed. It hasn't got better or worse. It's the same effect. So you think it's more than the antenna. It's something else with the transmitting equipment or the arrangement of the equipment, correct?
I ask you, the signal strength that you see, it's the same as it's always been, right?
Yes.
How does that compare to, say, channel 25, which is 9?
All right, well, first of all, I don't measure signal strength off the converter by the bar graph. Most of them on a particular one I'm using are at 85 to 95%. Channel 9 is about the same level as far as the bar graph compared to RF44, channel 5, but they're two of them about 10 dB difference in signal level. I believe RF 25 is coming from World Trade Center, and maybe I'm wrong, an RF-44 is still coming off of Empire. But there's about, a 10 dB difference in carrier looking at that pilot signal. But I get both fine. And I can look at the subchannels on channel 9, like 9, 1, 2, 3, and 4.